It's Thursday, the 4th of September, 2025, and you're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman, in Flagstaff. Today we have news from our military news websites, Stripes.com, MilitaryTimes.com, and others, as well as our veteran service organizations, their websites and publications, and, of course, the Veterans Administration. But first, we'll turn to the taskandpurpose.com website for this item. Legendary Marine Raider finally promoted to Sergeant at 100. One of the original Marine Raiders, Frank S. Wright, was bayoneted in the stomach and shot in the chest during combat across the Pacific in World War II, including at Iwo Jima. This is by Jeff Shogel, and it's from the 3rd of September. Frank S. Wright recently got what he described as a big promotion. When reporter called to ask to talk about it, he answered the phone with, "Frank Wright, Sergeant, U.S. Marine Corps." Now 100 and more than 80 years after service in fierce combat as a corporal in World War II, Wright was a sergeant. "I spent 2.5 years in the South Pacific and went through Guadalcanal, New Georgia, Guam, and Iwo Jima," Wright told Task and Purpose this week. "And I was wounded twice. I have 2 Purple Hearts, and that's one of the reasons they thought that I'd be eligible for this, and I've had a lot of congratulatory letters and other things that have been given to me." The story of Wright's service during World War II is epic. One of the original Marine Raiders, he survived being bayoneted in the stomach on Guam and was later shot in the chest and arm at Iwo Jima. Still, for the past 80 years, Wright has wanted to complete one more milestone in his military career, being promoted to sergeant. Last month, Wright got his wish when he became the newest and oldest sergeant of Marines at 100, according to an August 31st post in a ceremony at Camp Pendleton, California. In January 1942, Wright lied about his age to enlist in the Marines at 16. He initially served with the 4th Raider Battalion. The Marine Raiders of World War II are often credited as the U.S. military's first Special Operations Force. He left the Marines as a corporal. In August, Marine Corps Commandant General Eric Smith recommended that Wright receive an honorary promotion to sergeant. "Recommending Frank for this honorary promotion was an easy decision," Smith told Task and Purpose in August. "He's a proud veteran of the famed Marine Raiders. His courageous service during the Pacific Campaign, including historic battles like Guadalcanal and Iwo Jima, has firmly cemented his place in the legacy of the Corps." The August 31st promotion ceremony took place in Stockton, California, said retired Marine Gunnery Sergeant Marvin Hernandez Garcia, a close friend to Wright, who coordinated the event. Wright wore a Marine Corps uniform from World War II for the ceremony. "It was very moving," Hernandez Garcia told Task and Purpose. "His 2 sons promoted Frank. They were the ones that put on the chevrons." For Wright, the promotion recognizes his service during World War II and work he continues to do on behalf of the Marine Corps, including talking to young Americans who are thinking about enlisting. "I am a Marine, and I shall be a Marine for the rest of my life," Wright said. That's legendary Marine Raider finally promoted to Sergeant at 100. Next, we have an item from Stripes.com, the official website of the Stars and Stripes newspaper from the 2nd of September, by Eric Kane. VJ Celebration honors veterans at National World War II Memorial. Washington. Veterans, families, and the public gathered Tuesday at the National World War II Memorial to mark the 80th anniversary of VJ Day, the former surrender of Japan to the Allies aboard the USS Missouri, and the official end of World War II. The Friends of the National World War II Memorial and the National Park Service co-hosted the observance, which included remarks from park leaders, wreath laying, and a performance by the Marine Band. Surviving veterans, some more than 100 years old, were honored for their service, sacrifice, and enduring legacy. That's VJ Celebration honors veterans at National World War II Memorial. Next, we have USS Arizona Memorial to resume ticketing after months of disruption from repair efforts. This is by Wyatt Olson of Stars and Stripes from the 3rd of September. The National Park Service will begin taking advanced reservations on Monday for tours of the USS Arizona Memorial for visits beginning November the 1st and beyond. Advanced reservations were temporarily paused in July as preservation work began on the memorial and made access for visitors too unpredictable to plan in advance. This is a critical project that will temporarily impact boat operations, and with winter break and holiday travel season approaching, we want to ensure visitors have the opportunity to get their tickets early, Tom Leatherman, superintendent of the Pearl Harbor National Memorial, said in a news release Tuesday. The U.S. Navy, in coordination with the Park Service, is removing a pair of mooring platforms that were welded to the Arizona during salvage operations after the December 7, 1941 attack that sank the battleship. Ferries, barges, and ships were tethered to the platforms as workers stripped parts needed for the war effort. In October 2023, staff with the Pearl Harbor National Memorial discovered the smaller of the two platforms had shifted and begun sinking into the harbor. Navy and Park Service divers assessed the conditions of both platforms, and officials concluded that they should be permanently removed to prevent damage to the Arizona's hull. Those platforms are expected to be entirely removed over the next 2 months, the Park Service said in a news release Tuesday. The Navy-operated boats that shuttle workers to and from the memorial have been disrupted by the preservation work. Boat access by visitors will begin on a first-come, first-served, same-day basis as soon as operations can be performed safely, the news release said. Information about obtaining tickets is at www.recreation.gov/ticket/233338/ticket/16. The U.S. Arizona Memorial was opened in 1962 and honors the 1,177 crewmen who died there. The remains of 900 sailors and Marines were entombed in the doomed ship as it sank. Surviving crew members had the option of placing urns holding their cremated remains inside the ship. The last remaining Arizona survivor, Lou Conter, died in April of 2024. Previously, the memorial received more than 2 million visitors each year. That's USS Arizona Memorial to resume ticketing after months of disruption from repair efforts. We'll move on now to militarytimes.com for this article. Carrier landings no longer required for Navy pilots' wings of gold. This is from the 2nd of September by Riley Cedar. And let me just tell you, I communicate with a lot of former Navy pilots, and they are not happy about this. But to continue, U.S. Navy pilots in training no longer have to complete a requirement previously considered integral for flight school success. As of March 2025, students can qualify for graduation without landing a jet on an aircraft carrier, according to a Navy spokesperson who provided an emailed statement to the Navy Times. Pilots will instead complete carrier qualifications during follow-on training at the fleet replacement squadron they're assigned to. The strategic decision of moving strike pipeline carrier qualifications from the training syllabus to their fleet replacement squadrons was driven by increased technological capabilities in the fleet, the spokesperson said. In 2016, the Navy rolled out new flight technology, dizzyingly dubbed the Maritime Augmented Guidance with Integrated Controls for Carrier Approach and Recovery Precision Enabling Technologies, mercifully abbreviated to Magic Carpet, that streamlines aircraft carrier landings by reducing the number of moving parts a pilot must deal with prior to touching down on a carrier. Before Magic Carpet, pilots had to coordinate glide slope, angle of attack, and lineup before landing, according to a Navy release at the time of the technology's release. But the technology separates or decouples the three areas of responsibility so that adjusting one doesn't require the pilot to adjust the others as much as before. While Navy student pilots currently fly the T-45 Goshawk, a training aircraft that does not come equipped with magic carpet, there are plans underway to replace the aging jet. The U.S. Navy launched the Undergraduate Jet Training System program in 2020 with the intention of finding the service's next aircraft to train future pilots on, according to a request for information. Students training to fly FA-18s, F-35s, and EA-18Gs are no longer required to land on a carrier before receiving their wings of gold, which are awarded to naval aviators after they've completed aviation training. The Navy spokesperson said the requirement was also nixed to reduce training pipeline times and ensure fleets received qualified pilots faster. However, students training to be future E-2 pilots, as well as international military students, are still required to complete carrier landing qualifications on a ship in the T-45 Goshawk before graduation. That's carrier landings no longer required for Navy pilots' wings of gold. Next, along that same line, naval aviation, we have what we know about Nat Geo's upcoming Top Gun series. This article is from MilitaryTimes.com by Hope Hodge-Seck from the 28th of August. A new 6-part series on National Geographic promises to take viewers along the journey to the real Top Gun training grounds as cameras follow student pilots from the Navy and Marine Corps through the end of their qualification pipeline. Top Gun's The Next Generation, which is set to air on Nat Geo on September 16th and streaming the next day on Hulu and Disney Plus, showcases 6 months of high-stakes aerial training, brutal physical demands, and emotional reckoning, where only the top performers earn the chance to fly the most coveted aircraft, according to the series description. Filmed with unprecedented access, it immerses audiences in a world of intense pressure and soaring expectations where dreams of earning wings of gold collide with the harsh reality of the grueling training. From bombing drills to close-range dogfights and nail-biting carrier approaches, each episode captures the intense demands of a program that challenges their abilities, endurance, and resolve at every turn. A recently released trailer and episode descriptions provide a taste of what viewers can expect when they tune in. And here's what we know so far. T-45 Goshawk gets its moment in the sun. The 1986 Tom Cruise blockbuster that put Top Gun on the map, that is, the Navy Strike Fighter Tactics Program, now in Fallon, Nevada, focused on pilots flying the iconic F-14 Tomcat. This new series, focused on the training prior to making it to Top Gun, will prominently feature a workhorse of fighter pilot training, the white and red T-45C Goshawk Trainer. Imagery from the trailer confirms the action in the new series is taking place at Naval Air Station Meridian, Mississippi, one of two final training locations for Naval Strike Fighter pilots students seeking to earn their wings of gold. Made by McDonnell Douglas, now Boeing, the two-seat Goshawk has been in service since the late 1980s and is the only fighter trainer equipped to land on aircraft carriers. And while the Goshawk's top speed of 645 miles an hour is about half that of the F-18 Super Hornets and F-35 Joint Strike Fighters, the student pilots may soon fly. It's still an intense ride. It's like we teleport, one student says in a trailer voiceover, leaning into Top Gun nostalgia. From the familiar opening chords of the trailer to a sweaty volleyball game in the sun, throwbacks to the movie that started it all are everywhere. That may be appropriate, as Top Gun lore is now almost inextricably part of the fabric of the Navy. The movie, at least according to rumor, led to a Navy recruiting boom as the service took advantage of the interest and curiosity it spurred. The Navy also went all in on collaborating with Hollywood for the 2022 sequel, Top Gun: Maverick. Other Top Gun callbacks in the trailer include a shot of a student pilot speeding along on a highway on a motorcycle a la Tom Cruise, and another mustachioed pilot being compared to Goose from the movie. "Goose dies," the pilot responds. I hope there's not any similarities. Drama, conflict, and attrition. The trailer and synopses for these six episodes underscore the high-stakes tenor of real-life fighter training. "If you make a mistake, it is possible you don't come back," one pilot intones. The intensity commences with the first episode, Strike, in which the students enter advanced phase training with a set of breathtaking bombing tests, according to synopses. Diving at speeds they've never faced before, students struggle with dynamic moves and start to make high-risk mistakes. Instructors deliver tough assessments in the debriefs to keep the students safe. The second episode will see the students practicing real-world carrier landings under pressure to succeed. The third takes them into the dogfighting phase, pitting them against seasoned instructors working hard to bring them down. In the fourth, they reach the second dogfighting phase and the breaking point for some. The physical strain proves too much for one student, while another has a crisis of confidence when past failures come back to haunt him, according to synopses. Dogfight drama and tension between students and instructors continues to feature prominently in the final two episodes, leading to the students' graduation from the Advanced Jet Training Pipeline at Meridian. It's the ultimate test of precision, pressure, and perseverance, Nat Geo says, of the training. For those interested in fighter aviation, those who think Top Gun would be cool even without Tom Cruise in the cockpit, it also sounds like must-watch TV. And that's what we know about Nat Geo's upcoming Top Gun series. We'll return to task and purpose for this article, Army Axes Promotion Boards That Weighed Opinions of Peers, Subordinates for Commanders. Army officials said last month they were reviewing the Command Assessment Program, which was officially established in the last week of the Biden administration. Now, the program is officially canceled. This from the 2nd of September by Patty Nieberg. An Army program that used peer and subordinate feedback to select leaders for command is being discontinued. The Command Assessment Program, CAP, was created as a pilot program in 2019 to evaluate sergeants major, lieutenant colonels, and full bird colonels for command assignment in battalion and brigade level units using peer and subordinate feedback. Each year, nearly 2,000 candidates are evaluated under CAP for Army leadership positions. The Army will now revert to its previous review system for command selection that used reviews by superiors, a system that one former official told Task and Purpose was so superficial that it was akin to choosing leaders based on the equivalent of two tweets. Former Army Secretary Christine Wormuth formally established CAP in January in the final week of the Biden administration, but her successor in the Trump administration, Army Secretary Dan Driscoll, downgraded CAP from a formal program and placed it under review last month, with officials saying the pause was a way to make changes to the program. Officials also had recently announced renaming of the program to the Army Warrior Leader Certification. Army officials told Task and Purpose that CAP was officially ended and that the service would revert back to the boards used in the centralized selection list process. The centralized selection list board, CSL, process has officers review evaluation reports for command candidates written by both a rater and a senior rater to determine whether soldiers are suitable for leadership positions. Major Travis Shaw, an Army spokesperson, said the officers who sit on CSL boards evaluate officers' past assignments, performance, and demonstrated potential to produce an order of merit list. Previous CAP results will not factor into the process, Shaw said. Army officials did not elaborate on why CAP was ended as an evaluation program. Shaw said in a statement that the discontinuation of CAP is in line with a June 20th memo from the Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness, that mandated a review of military officer evaluations, promotion boards, and command selection processes, Shaw said. A defense official said the Pentagon is still reviewing and evaluating military officer promotion and selection procedures and referred task and purpose to the Army for questions on CAP. The program was at the center of controversy last year when General Charles Hamilton was relieved as head of Army Materiel Command after an investigation found he attempted to go around the CAP system to push the promotion of a subordinate officer for battalion command. CAPT look at feedback from Joes. In a Military Review article from January, two former CAP officials wrote that the previous command selection processes were inadequate because they present a narrow view of an officer's performance and potential based on fewer sources of feedback and over a limited amount of time. In one board, an officer who ranked last against 29 other candidates on the CSL order merit list was ranked first on their battalion-level CAP assessment, according to an article written by former Army Chief of Staff James McConville and Major General J.P. McGee, Director of the Army Talent Management Task Force for War on the Rocks. Under CSL, a board of officers is charged with reviewing more than 1,000 packets, some for only minutes at a time. McConville told reporters in 2019 when announcing the battalion pilot program, McConville said CAP would be a transformational change in how the service selected its leaders. CAP included multiple evaluations from subordinates and peers who worked with the officer and looked at performance developed over the course of an Army career, not in the last 6 months before assessment, Army officials said. A former Army officer who took part in three CAP selections in 2020 and 2021 said the process was an upgrade from the CSL selection process, which only used senior rater and rater feedback, making evaluations pretty limited in scope. "We counted this up. Their opinion matters most. When you look at what they write on your evaluation, it's an average of 110 characters or 18 words. Multiply that by 5 evaluations, which is generally what they look at. That's the equivalent of 2 tweets," the former officer said. "I'm not kidding. That's the information they use to select officers, and that's what we're going back to." In addition to peer and subordinate reviews, CAP candidates were also given an overall score based on written communication, verbal communication, physical fitness, and strategic potential skills. The former officer, who said the inclusion of anonymous peer and subordinate evaluations often helped uncover candidates who had problematic behaviors, like bullying. "This isn't like anonymous Twitter comments or something like that," the officer said. "You can definitely tell the difference between one person with an axe to grind and multiple people observing very extreme behavior." Everett Spain, an Army colonel and head of Behavioral Sciences and Leadership Department at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, wrote in a Harvard Business Review article in 2020 that CAP was designed to overcome legacy challenges where officers were picked on a ranking compared to their peers instead of personality traits that would make them more suitable for a prescribed role. Spain gave the example of choosing the best company commander for a role to advise the military of a U.S. ally overseas. While company commanders lead soldiers who are similar to oneself, advisors influence people from other cultures in foreign environments. Better results could be obtained by identifying individuals with superior cognitive flexibility, cross-cultural fluency, and interpersonal skills, he wrote. If the Army knew which officers enjoyed international travel and meeting people from different cultures, it could choose someone whose talents and preferences were suited to the position, most likely ending up with a high performer who would enjoy and remain in the job. And that's Army Axis Promotion Boards that weighed opinions of peers, subordinates for commanders. Our next item is from MilitaryTimes.com. Military lawyers authorized to serve as temporary immigration judges. This is from the 2nd of September by Konstantin Toropin of the Associated Press. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has approved sending up to 600 military lawyers to the Justice Department to serve as temporary immigration judges, according to a memo reviewed by the Associated Press. The military will begin sending groups of 150 attorneys, both military and civilians, to the Justice Department as soon as practicable, and the military services should have the first round of people identified by next week, according to the memo, dated August 27th. The effort comes as the Trump administration cracks down on immigration across the country, ramping up arrests and deportations. Immigration courts are already dealing with a massive backlog of roughly 3.5 million cases that has ballooned in recent years. However, numerous immigration judges have been fired or left voluntarily after taking deferred resignations offered by the administration, according to their union. The International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers said in July that at least 17 immigration judges had been fired without cause in courts across the country. That's left about 600 immigration judges, union figures show, meaning the Pentagon move will double their ranks. The move is being done at the request of the Justice Department, and the memo noted that the details will initially last no more than 179 days, but can be renewable. When asked about the move, a DOJ spokesperson referred questions about the plan to the Defense Department. Pentagon officials directed questions to the White House. A White House official said Tuesday that the administration is looking at a variety of options to help resolve the significant backlog of immigration cases, including hiring additional immigration judges. The official said the matter should be a priority that everyone, including those waiting for adjudication, can rally around. That's military lawyers authorized to serve as temporary immigration judges. You're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Hoffman. If you'd like to listen to Weekly Reveille and other Sun Sounds of Arizona programming, either at a time of your choosing or as it streams, you can listen to that on the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org or on the Sun Sounds of Arizona app. And that's available at the Apple App Store for your iPhone or iPad, or the Google Play Store for your Android phone or tablet. And finally, you can listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona streaming on your Amazon Dot or Echo. Well, let's turn now to a publication of one of our veteran service organizations, the Military Officers Association of America, the Military Officer Magazine from September. This is their Fall 2025 Retirement Guide, Going All In on Retirement. Prepare wisely before completely hanging up your hat. People often speak of future retirement as a time when you cash out as a winner because you've played your cards right. And significantly, military officers' benefits deal them a strong hand. I think military health care is an ace in the hole for would-be early retirees, according to Lila Quintiliani, MOA's director or program director for financial and benefits education and counseling. It's an advantage that no one in the civilian world has, but, she warned, even this advantage has potential pitfalls. I've encountered a handful of retirees who resisted enrolling in Medicare because they thought they'd get care at the VA or they were grandfathered into the U.S. Family Health Plan. Then later they moved or changed their mind and were shocked with a permanent penalty on their Part B premium, said Quintiliani, who is a chartered financial consultant and accredited financial counselor. I talked to one gentleman who is getting married at 70 and moving out of the boundaries of the U.S. Family Health Plan because his bride lived in another state. He was going to be paying a lifetime 50% penalty on his Medicare Part B premium, she added. Healthcare is one of the most crucial financial elements in retirement, and there are several factors to consider. Quintiliani detailed some of those. Approximately 70% of people turning 65 will need long-term care services during their lifetime, but neither Medicare nor TRICARE for Life covers long-term care. Many retired service members don't realize their entitlement to TRICARE ends at midnight on the last day of the month before they turn 65. To qualify for TRICARE for life, they must enroll in Medicare Parts A and B. A distribution from a traditional retirement account is counted as taxable income. Retired pay is also taxable income. While TRICARE for life is free, Medicare does have a monthly premium, and high earners face a potential surcharge known as the income-related monthly adjustment amount. More information is available at www.moaa.org/IRMAA. That figure is based off the modified adjusted gross income from one's last recorded tax return, which is 2 years prior. Some retirees might be eligible for care through the VA, but that care is unavailable for spouses. In addition, VA nursing homes often have limited space. Careful planning can pay off. Quintiliani said, a military retiree who has planned well and can live off their military pension plus VA disability pay plus investments could easily retire in their 40s because they don't have to worry about health care other than covering TRICARE premiums, deductibles, and copays, which are a fraction of what they would be in a civilian insurance plan. Choose your lifestyle. To retire completely, you must consider what your income and expenses will be. There's no one-size-fits-all answer to this, but you should consider these two questions. At what age do you want to retire? And what kind of lifestyle, frugal, as-is, or bucket list, do you envision? Most people need between 55 and 80% of their pre-retirement income to maintain their current lifestyle, said Captain Paul J. Frost, accredited financial counselor, U.S. Navy retired. MOA's Program Director for Financial and Benefits, Education, Counseling, and Veteran Services. But to achieve that range, military retirement pay and Social Security won't be enough without supplemental income. To maintain the same standard of living upon retirement, Frost recommended having a minimum financial portfolio goal of 25 times your desired supplement. For example, he said, if you believe you'll need $40,000 to supplement your sources of income each year, your financial portfolio goal should be $1 million. Frost also said prospective retirees should ask themselves, have I considered the tax implications of my investment portfolio and income sources? What will be my future required minimum distributions, or RMDs, from any individual retirement accounts and 401k plans? Should I consider rolling traditional retirement accounts to Roth accounts that do not require RMDs? What would be the best timing for that to happen to reduce the tax burden? To achieve your goal, Frost and Quintiliani both strongly urge engaging a financial planner, particularly a fee-only professional. Financial consultancies also offer free advice online. For instance, Fidelity Investments gives this metric for saving through a military career. Aim to save at least 1 times your salary by age 30, 3 times by age 40, 6 times by 50, 8 times by 80, and 10 times by 67. This is good advice, said Brigadier General Greg Zanetti, U.S. Army retired, a financial advisor and fiduciary. The method of the saving is the hard part. Zanetti knows firsthand about financial ups and downs. After building a successful investment advisor business, he was assigned deputy commander for Joint Task Force Guantanamo. Perhaps good for the country, but not so much for his financial plans. I had to sell my business, Zanetti said. It's hard to take care of clients from Cuba. Because of the significant loss of income and the fact that a non-compete clause didn't allow him to return to his business in his home state, his financial plans were upended, he said. But thanks to his experience in the Army and at the Pentagon, he was eventually hired by one of the richest men in the world to help manage that person's assets, he said. From there, he got a solid grasp on what he calls big money, and the way wealth flows. Agility is key. My belief is the conventional rules of investing are no longer working, Zanetti said. I believe a post-World War II financial structure is changing at lightning speed. He forecasts a disruptive transition of great investment opportunities. In the short term, he sees more inflation as the U.S., Europe, and Asia are all hitting the debt wall. Devalued currencies will lead to higher prices to be countered by investing in low-tech things like natural resources, energy, precious metals, and other hard assets, he added. He also believes that flow will reverse, favoring newer technologies such as quantum computing, artificial intelligence, and biotechnology. Once this trend gets underway, more traditional investment strategies will work again, he said. What does this mean for investors in the military, among others? Agility is the key, Zanetti said. Do not become a slave to orthodoxy. In other words, do not believe what worked for the past 40 to 50 years will work for the next 40 to 50 years. Choose your own adventure. Transitions are inherent to military service. Fortunately, DoD's Office of Financial Readiness offers military personnel extensive financial training from entry into service right up until their career transition. This includes access to personal financial counselors. Some who've taken advantage of the trainings retake classes during their military careers in order to keep up with financial changes and to glean new strategies for retirement. As the actual retirement date approaches, leaving details to the last minute can cause unwelcome financial strains. Some service members assume VA benefits will automatically kick in upon retirement. But like many other governmental processes, the timeline for application approval can be uncertain and frustrating and leave a service member without those benefits for a period of time after retirement. Another moving part of retirement and its effect on personal finances is where you plan to retire. A recent survey by online financial publication Go Banking Rates highlighted the enormous differences between retiring in the least expensive state, West Virginia. The annual cost of living was estimated at $50,954, and annual expenditures after Social Security came to $28,517. You'd need $712,913 in savings to retire there. Contrast that with Hawaii, with an annual cost of living at $110,921 and annual expenditures after Social Security reaching $88,483. You'd need more than $2.2 million of savings to retire on the islands. But retirement isn't just about geography. Consider more far-reaching goals. For those who feel comfortable about their financial situation, as many MOA members do, they also begin to consider their legacy. Frost said, are they looking to leave a legacy for their children or grandchildren, to their church, or other beneficiary? If this is important to the member, I would tell them to consider seeking an independent financial advisor if they didn't already have one. In addition to financial advice, they can typically recommend an estate or trust professional to ensure your legacy is set up to your wishes. Then there's an alternate strategy, said Commander Jim Tritton, U.S. Navy, retired. Tritton, a published and award-winning writer, is well known in the Albuquerque, New Mexico area for his dedication to veterans, especially those with service in Vietnam and subsequent wars, coaching them in weekly sessions on how to write about their experiences. For Tritton, satisfaction trumps additional income. The most satisfying volunteer work I did in my post-career years was to work with an individual who'd spent most of his adult life incarcerated. He said I helped him break that cycle, and he's now a hands-on volunteer working with other individuals like him. Helping yourself while helping others is a win-win strategy for what to do in your post-work years. Give something different a chance. Boldly go, explore new worlds, meet new people, try new activities. You may just find that your most important contributions to society will occur when you least expect it, after you stop working for money. Give an alternative exit strategy a chance. And that is going all in on retirement. Prepare wisely before completely hanging up your hat. An article by Latayne C. Scott from the Military Officer magazine. Let's move on to the Veterans Administration, and our first item is the Southern Arizona VA Healthcare Newsletter. And we have some items from that. First, we have Tucson VA hosts local National Creative Arts Festival competition. The Southern Arizona VA Healthcare System was thrilled to host the local level of the National Creative Arts Festival competition August 14th and 15th, highlighting the artistic talents of our veteran patients. You can visit the Catalyst Creative Collective's gallery at 4500 North Oracle Road, Suite 110, Tucson, Arizona, 85705, to view the Tucson VA Creative Arts Festival first place entries. The Creative Arts display will close on Friday, September the 26th. And to learn more about the event, there is a link in the newsletter to the Tucson VA hosts local National Creative Arts Festival. Next, from the Southern Arizona newsletter, we have Women Veteran Tele Town Hall. The Southern Arizona VA Healthcare System Women Veterans Tele Town Hall will be Thursday, September 11th, 2025, from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. You can join them for the virtual Tele Town Hall, and they extend the invitation to all women veterans who receive care at the facility. We will be providing updated information on the Southern Arizona VA Healthcare System menopause services and answering your questions. The event will be live streaming at www.facebook.com/VA Tucson. That's all one word, VA Tucson. You can also visit access.live/womenshealth, and that's one word, women's health, or dial in at 833-380-0738. Just a reminder, it is going to be on Thursday, September 11th, from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. There's an announcement for a Military Veterans and Families Resource Fair, Gila Valley Veterans Services, and this is on Friday, September the 5th, 2025, at from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Graham County Fairgrounds. That's U.S. Highway 191 in Safford, Arizona. There's free entry and a lunch will be provided. This is being sponsored and supported by the Lions Club and the County of Graham, the Arizona Veterans Stand Down Alliance, and the Arizona Department of Veterans Affairs. Several resources on hand providing information for veterans and caregivers. Lunch will be provided. The 16th Gathering of the American Indian Veterans will be September 6th, 2025, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Casino del Sol Conference Center, and that's at 5655 West Valencia Road in Tucson. You can bring your DD-214 to determine your benefits eligibility. There will be PACT Act toxic exposure screenings available. The Veterans Benefits Association benefits claims will be there, as well as VHA eligibility and enrollment, veteran and community resource tables, warrior honoring ceremony, and coin presentation. This is organized by the federal, state, tribal, and local community members. The event venue and meals will be graciously provided by the Pascua Yaqui Tribe, Casino del Sol, Arizona Complete Health, Tucson Indian Center, and Desert Diamond Casinos. For more information, you can contact Laura Ibarra at 520-792-1450, extension 520-621-6622 or Magdalena Sanchez, same number, 520-792-1450, extension 12719. Join us for the 16th gathering of the American Indian Veterans on Saturday, September 6th, 9 to 3, Casino del Sol Conference Center, 5655 West Valencia Road. Several VA and community resources on hand providing information to veterans, their families, and caregivers. More information on the event, again, that number is 520-792-1450, extension 16622. There'll be a POW MIA 24-hour vigil run at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. Runners are charged to keep the flag in motion for the entire 24 hours. Anyone with base access to Davis-Monthan is welcome to join the run. Water will be provided for runners, and participants are encouraged to attend the POW MIA ceremony following the run. This is going to be on Thursday, the 18th of September, from 1500 to Friday, 19th September, 1500. In other words, 24-hour of a run. The Benko Gym Outdoor Track, Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. And information, you can contact Airman First Class Alexis Aguirre at 520-228-2608 or email alexis.j.aguirre2.mil, and that's at health.mil. So it's alexisjaguirre2.mil@health.mil. National POW MIA Recognition Day is Friday, September 19th at the Pima Air and Space Museum, 6000 East Valencia Road, Tucson, Arizona, 85756. The ceremony begins at 4 p.m. Join us on Friday, September 19th from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Pima Air and Space Museum located at 6000 East Valencia Road for a POW MIA ceremony in collaboration with Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. We will honor those who were former prisoners of war and those missing in action. And that's the information from the Southern Arizona Veterans Administration Healthcare System. Turn now to the Phoenix VA news from the Phoenix area Veterans Administration Healthcare System. And our first item is the First Friday Dementia Series 2025. They're welcoming Dr. Santia Reddy and Ryan McGuire, LCSW, geriatric extended care physician and clinical social worker. VA resource highlight, Geriatric Patient Aligned Care Team, or PACT, from September 5th, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. You can join virtually by going to https://bit.ly/3vmwbxh or by phone at 404-397-1596. The code is 2762187 and the PIN is 4023. The series is brought to you by the Phoenix VA Memory Clinic and the COACH program, covering coping as a caregiver, tips and tools, Ask the Experts, and Community Spotlight. And you can call 602-277-5551, extension 7393, for more information. The Phoenix VA welcomes Dr. Santia Reddy and Ryan McGuire, LCSW geriatric extended care physician and clinical social worker. And again, that's from 11 to 12 on the 5th of September. And there is a link in their newsletter for the virtual join to that presentation. And again, the code or the phone is 404-397-1596, code 2762187, and a PIN 4023. Phoenix VA Clinic at 32nd Street is having a blood drive on the 10th of September, Wednesday, from 7 a.m. to 10:30 a.m., and this is at the 32nd Street VA Clinic, Conference Room 1, 400 North 32nd Street in Phoenix. To schedule your appointment, you can contact Cynthia Gonzalez Tenenti at cynthia.gonzalez-tenenty at va.gov, Jennifer Morton at jennifer.morton at va.gov, and you can scan the QR code on that newsletter, or you can just visit www.vitalant.org, and their blood drive code for this blood drive is 100-535-81. They're announcing that new blood donors are needed. If you've never given blood, we need you. The number of Americans who give blood is declining. There's no substitute for human blood, and many patients cannot survive without it. Giving blood is truly a selfless and heroic act that gives life to patients. Make an appointment to give blood today. And that's, again, presented by Vitalant, V-I-T-A-L-A-N-T, .org. Or their phone number is 877-25-VITAL. They're announcing a virtual mental health summit and for community mental health. The date is Wednesday, October the 8th. The time is 8:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Attending this virtual summit will earn 3.5 continuing education units. The details, you matter, upstream suicide prevention, an informative VAVISN 22 summit focused on suicide prevention, education, and partnership across Arizona, New Mexico, and Southern California. The Eventbrite registration link is at bit.ly/45NKMEK. Then there is a Arizona PBS Career Networking event taking place on Thursday, September 11th, from 5:30 to 8 p.m. It's Career Resource Fair and Film Screening Event. This is produced by the Gateway Community College, Maricopa Community College. The event is designed to be a vital resource for our community during these uncertain times in the job market. We're especially focused on reaching Latino communities, veterans, and adults aged 25 to 45 who are actively seeking employment or career transitions. Your help in spreading the word can make a real difference. Event highlights, community partners, Veterans Affairs, Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, City of Phoenix, Gateway Community College, Arizona Department of Economic Services, and more. There'll be panel discussions featuring experts addressing two critical issues highlighted in Working Nation films: wage theft and its impact on Latino workers, and combat veterans transitioning into the healthcare system. It's more than just a career networking event. It's a chance to connect, learn, and uplift our community. And those are a few selected announcements from the Phoenix VA Healthcare System newsletter, Veterans News Now. Well, let's turn now to news.va.gov for some items from the Veterans Administration. Veteran with Parkinsonism, telehealth saved my life. Veteran care from home. This is from the 3rd of September by Gwen McMillan, Communications Specialist of the Digital Health Office. Telehealth saved my life, said Vincent DeMauro, a veteran with Parkinsonism in Westchester, Pennsylvania. It's pretty amazing how the whole telehealth team comes together. It reminds me sometimes of fantasy football. I feel like I have a dream team. Before getting connected with his current dream team of telehealth providers, DeMauro spent years suffering from seemingly unrelated symptoms such as muscle tremors, loss of smell, and stomach problems. After seeing a primary care provider at the Coatesville VA Medical Center, he went in for extensive testing at the Parkinson's Disease Research, Education, and Clinical Center, or PADRECC, in Philadelphia and Wilmington VA Medical Center. In 2020, he was diagnosed with Parkinsonism, a condition similar to Parkinson's disease. Expertise from out of state. After his diagnosis, DeMauro's health provider connected him with telehealth providers, including neurologist Dr. Beth Whittington, who's part of the National Teleneurology Program, or NTNP, a multidisciplinary neurology telehealth team that the Coatesville VA Medical Center receives support from. Even though Whittington is based in Indiana, she gets DeMauro the support he needs to keep working by visiting with him in the comforts of his home. For example, she's written letters certifying his need for telework and county transportation services. Whittington's team includes experts in pharmacy, social work, nursing, as well as consultation with movement disorder specialists of the National PADRECC Network. NTNP allows VA to leverage telehealth to bring multidisciplinary and expert care directly to the veteran. Dr. Whittington has been like a guardian angel for me, DeMauro said. I can't drive anymore because I have freezing episodes. If it wasn't for her, I wouldn't have county transportation to work or the option for telework. Adjusting care from a distance. In addition to video visits, Whittington uses other telehealth technologies to provide treatment to DeMauro. About a year ago, DeMauro was experiencing muscle spasms, which was disrupting his sleep. Whittington sent him a wrist-worn monitoring device so she could track his sleep and symptoms remotely. This approach saved him from traveling to a VA medical center and allowed her to obtain days' worth of data, far surpassing what one could view in a short medical visit. It's about a two-hour ride into Philadelphia, said DeMauro, whose condition makes it difficult to be stationary for more than 45 minutes. So going into PADRECC is a big ordeal. Unfortunately, that is all the time that we have for Veteran with Parkinsonism. Telehealth saved my life. You've been listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. Thank you for joining me, and remember, you can listen to Weekly Reveille and other Sun Sounds of Arizona programming either as it streams or at a time of your choosing by going to sunsounds.org, the Sun Sounds of Arizona website, or by downloading the Sun Sounds of Arizona app from the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store, or you can listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona streaming on your Amazon Echo or Dot.